Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Selling Greenville, your favorite real estate podcast here in Greenville, South Carolina. I'm your host, as always, Stan McCune, realtor right here in Greenville, South Carolina. You can find all of my contact information in the show notes. If you need a realtor in the Greenville area, the upstate of South Carolina, Spartanburg, Anderson, all those good places here in the upstate. And just a reminder, as always, if you enjoy this content, and we're going to have some interesting content today that I think you're going to hopefully enjoy. If you enjoy this content, please like, rate, review, in particular, subscribe to make sure you don't miss future content, because those are the ways that you're going to support the show if you don't support me as your realtor, which I hope you do both. But at the very least, support the show so we can keep this thing going and get it out to as many people as possible. So I'd appreciate if you guys could do that. And by the way, if you're on YouTube, leave me a little comment. I try to respond to every comment on YouTube, so I appreciate this. Going to be an interview episode, good one to watch on YouTube, because I'm interviewing someone with very long hair, very interesting setup with a microphone on a Stanley Cup. So there's some interesting things going on today. So today I'm going to be interviewing Seth Teagarden. Seth has absolutely no real estate value to bring to the table. But Seth is one of my, if not my best friend, to be completely honest. And every now and then I feel like we need to kind of break up the content in this show. And so I felt like it was time to have, you know, just a random episode with my friend Seth. We're going to talk about a lot of things, from comparing Greenville to some other markets to Seth actually lives in a great little resort area in Georgia. That's a great little getaway for people, you know, trying to get away from Greenville for a weekend or whatever. He also lives in a log cabin. We're going to talk about some of that. So there's going to be obviously some plenty of real estate tie-in, but really just want to have fun. And you know, this is my show, so I can do whatever the heck I want with it. And so that's what we're going to do. So Seth, welcome to the show. Thanks for coming on.
Yeah, man. I'm excited to be here. Go ahead.
No. Go ahead. What were you going to say?
No, just I love getting to watch some of your content and see what you're doing. And obviously, you know, how you've grown your real estate market and used so many various ways. So I'm excited to be a part of it.
Seth was, for those listening, when I first released, so when I 5 years ago, when I did my first episodes, I did what the experts say to do, and I recorded like five episodes right away and released them all at once. And Seth was one of the first people to give me feedback. That was really helpful. And so that tells you guys he's been along for the ride for quite some time here.
Been there for a while, dude. It's been, gosh, man. Well, let's see. How long have you and Michelle been married?
15 going on 16 15? Years.
Yeah. So I guess we've known each other for
almost 20 years.
16 years. Is it?
Yeah.
Something like that. Yeah.
Yeah. Longer than that, but yeah, it's crazy. But, Seth, why don't you tell the people just kind of what you do, you know, who you are, just a brief introduction.
Yeah. So Seth Teagarden, I currently live in Ellijay, Georgia, which, like Stan said, is a really cool kind of mountain resort town up here in North Georgia. My wife and I over the years have been involved in various different ways in some type of full-time ministry. That's kind of been our life. And for a little while, we actually lived in South Carolina, just down the road from Stan there where you are. And we were down a little town called Clinton, or if you're from there, it's Clinton.
Clinton,
you know, Clinton, you got to say it real fast. And so we lived there from Atlanta, originally, or the greater Atlanta area. If you're familiar with Atlanta, I grew up in Woodstock on the sort of northwest side. My wife grew up in Lilburn.
That's why you look like a hippie.
That's right. Yes, that's why it's the exactly. Atlanta. My wife, Diana, and I have been able to spend some really cool years doing some kind of unique ministry. We've experienced some kind of unique things with working with at-risk youth and at-risk youth population. And then we moved up here to beautiful Ellijay Right over 4 years ago now. It's pushing 4.5 years, which is wild.
For those that don't know where LJ is, you want to kind of give them a geographic kind of idea.
So, essentially, you head to Atlanta and you basically go kind of straight north, and we're about 1.5 hours, basically just due north from Atlanta, kind of heading up towards, there's various different ways. You can head north towards Chattanooga, kind of head north towards Greenville, and we're kind of in the middle, if you will, of kind of those two paths on your way up. And so we're pretty close to the top of the state, sort of as the crow flies, if you will. We're, just a few miles away from like the Tennessee North Carolina border up there. So, yeah.
So for those that follow me on Facebook, which I tell people on here, if you want to follow me on Facebook, you're certainly welcome to. I have some spicy political opinions, so you've got to be prepared for that. But
No, not you.
no, not what am I saying? Yeah, no, I'm giving myself too much credit here. But you'll notice that Seth angers every single post that I do, and vice versa. I do the same thing to him. Including when he like, sorry, go
It's one of the
ahead.
highlights of my day. Like truly to get to scroll for just a minute and see, oh, what Stan posted. Only not I genuinely could care less about half the content, but just makes me so happy that I get to go in there and hold the little thing and slide my finger over to the anger and just walk away.
My favorite is when you post like a family photo or something, and it's like this real sappy, how many years you've been married and whatnot, and I get to anger that. It never gets old.
I think every once in a while, what really brings me joy is when all of a sudden I'll get a notification that like Stan angered your post, and I look, and it's one from literally like 15 years ago where you've like gone back intentionally and just to find ones that you missed and anger them. Oh, it's so great.
I know it's a deep well. I haven't found the bottom of it yet. I need to
And what's
keep going.
funny, I'm sure you've gotten this. I get questions every once in a while, like sometimes in person or like a message from somebody, and they'll be like, so. Who is Stan, and why is he angry at what you're
Just a
doing?
very angry person all the time, which
I
honestly
love
isn't
it.
wrong, but
This
there's some truth to that.
is so good.
So let's talk about topic at hand a little bit. So one thing, and honestly, all of these things that I want to talk about are things that I'm just personally interested in. Like some of these things are things that we've talked about in passing, but like not really in depth. But you guys have gone through different periods of renting versus owning, including, you reference ministry. You guys have been house parents before, which, by the way, the ministry in Clinton, what was that one called again?
Thornwell Home for Children.
Thornwell. So it's a children's home ministry. I guess there are multiple children's homes there, right?
Yeah, there's multiple houses that kids stay in there on campus.
And well, j why don't you just explain that for a second, how that
Yeah, yeah,
works.
yeah, yeah. So basically, in general, when we talk about being a house parent at a children's home, there's various ways that different places do it, but the big picture is you have kids that have nowhere else to go, for one reason or another. They don't have a home, and they come and they need a place to stay, and so they'll stay in our homes. And so what we do, we are. You know, our job, our full-time job as house parents is we're basically paid to parent 8 kids that live in our house with us. And so different homes do it different ways in terms of your off time and all that. But basically you work for a certain period of time, and then you have some amount of time off. And then again, depending on structure of the home, sometimes you stay in your home, and the students or the kids will leave and go to like what's called a relief home, or there's some places that do it, like Thornwell does it, where the house parents actually leave for a few days and they go to what's called their off-duty house. And so through that, we've done it in multiple different homes. There in Clinton, we worked there for a little while, and then we had an opportunity to work for a few years at a home down in South Atlanta. And both of those two different children's homes operated in different ways in terms of your house and your off time. And so yeah, like the one in down there in Clinton at Thornwell, we would work for a few number of days. I think it was 9 days or something like that, and then we would. we would move out of the home into our off-duty house that was a house that we were simply allowed to live in as part of our compensation package, right? That we got to live there. And then when we were at the other children's home at Christian City down in South Atlanta, the way that worked was we stayed there all the time. So we lived there again. So our part of our compensation package was us, having housing fully covered and paid for, but we lived there the whole time, and then the kids would transition out for about 9 days or
And
so.
you've also so you've had people can kind of think of those as like parsonages almost,
Correct. Yeah.
in a way. And by the way, I don't think you mentioned this, but Seth, for those listening, is a youth pastor now at East LJ
Yes.
Baptist.
Yeah. So I'm full-time youth pastor here at East LJ Baptist.
So anyway,
Still working with kids, loving
cool.
it.
So and you guys also rented too, right? When you lived in Knoxville, if I'm not
Well, yeah,
mistaken.
so we did just for, I guess it was about a year and a half when I was finishing up college. My wife and I had gotten married and we lived there about a year and a half, and we rented a townhome there
And then
for a little while.
you've owned in Georgia in the
Correct.
Atlanta area, and now you own in LJ. So I'm curious, because this is a question I get as a realtor all the time, but people don't like
Yeah.
to that people ask a realtor, but they're always like, realtors are gonna push you in the direction of being a homeowner, right?
Right,
And
right.
I think, the kind of ridiculous thing about that is, like, if someone asks me, should they rent or own, like, I don't have a guarantee that I'm going to ever get a commission from that person based on how I
That's
answer that
right.
question. So it's kind of ridiculous
That's
that I'm
right.
going to,
Yeah.
try to like move them in a certain direction. But
Because of maybe the slim possibility you might get a, yeah.
I guess, yeah, that there's kind of a consideration that there's like an inherent conflict of interest. The thing is that I also own rental properties, so that's where it kind of
Right.
breaks down.
Right.
If everyone owned and nobody rented, my rental properties would be functionally
Yeah.
useless. Tell me from your perspective, having had these different, having rented, having had kind of a parsonage style, having owned, what are some of the just pros and cons of each of them that, just kind of come to mind?
Yeah, so
And why are you currently owning as opposed to, obviously, the parsonage option isn't an option, but like owning it right now as opposed to renting.
So in general, for me, obviously, sort of there's the financial aspect, right? There's the being able to build up equity in a home that you own and all that, right? So there's that piece of it. But sort of outside of that, one of the biggest things, and this might, I don't know, this might be sort of a niche thing, but I personally am, I'm pretty handy, and I sort of work on things on my own. I have no problem fixing things, building that kind of thing. And if I, not to be arrogant, but like pretty decent at doing that type of thing. And so having your own home gives you an opportunity to do some of those things, fix some of those things, and you can do them as you want to and kind of immediately. In
As opposed to having to
renting,
wait for a landlord who may or
that's
may
right.
not even care about it.
So the I get to be fair, my perspective from renting was, officially renting only about a year and a half there when we were in Knoxville, and that went well. We didn't have any issues there. Now, when we were sort of the parsonage style, if you will, which again is a very drastically different thing, we had a whole system of maintenance requests, and when something would go wrong, we had to sort of submit that out and put our hands up and hope it got fixed. And I would do small little things here and there, but so yeah, for me, there's sort of outside of take outside that sort of financial aspect of it, and there's just the practicality of being able to do things yourself,
So,
that's what that's but that's a I get like that's a real niche little scenario,
yeah. Are there other aspects to it, or is that kind of the primary thing?
No, I wouldn't say I want to own a home just because I can fix it. I do enjoy the project here and there, and one of which I'm currently knee deep in a pretty gnarly one there on the back porch thing that I'm basically having to rebuild my whole back porch on a hill in the
No,
mountains.
thank you.
Yeah, it's great. Yeah, I think
I saw, by the
sort
way,
of.
but I saw yesterday a back deck to a house that it was One of the few times I would not go on it because
Dude.
it wasn't rotted out or anything, but I went under it first, and I kid you not, it was supported by 4x4s, which are about the smallest supports that you can use. I would personally prefer something a little bit bigger than a 4x4, but it was supported by 4x4s. But get this, they went up to the decking. And the joists were completely
They weren't
unsupported.
even no.
And yeah, there were no, they had like joist hangers and stuff like that, but I was like, this,
Nope.
and then we went around to the top and they had taped off like a small section of the deck. And I'm like, that part of the deck must be really dicey because like nobody should be going on any of this. So anyway,
Wow.
don't do that with your deck.
No, not happening. I will attach him to at least two floorboards and not one.
That's good.
So
That's a good idea.
that's good. No. I think so much of it too has to be contextual and where you live, if there are, if there are good options to own, and obviously within a budget and all that. We live in an area up here where, honestly, it kind of sucked when we moved up here 4 years ago. The market was kind of just, housing prices were very much on the rise when we bought, and we were blessed to be able to have found one that suited our needs and that we needed. And so, I think if this was happening, if we would have moved up there 3 months later, we wouldn't have been able to buy a house. It wouldn't, so for us, that part of the contextualized, that was our budget and where we were looking to move to. Our environment was maybe a speck unique, and I say that there's probably many, many, many other communities very similar, but because of the amount of sort of short-term rentals with people that buy homes up here, that rent them out as Airbnbs for people that come in, to vacation in the mountains. There was multiple factors that coupled all, but basically, as those housing prices were increasing, we weren't able to find a house to live in, so we would have been looking to rent, and so that just would have been the reality of it.
So you mentioned the, that you're handy, and I've seen that firsthand. Where do you kind of draw the line? Like, because you're not a contractor,
That's
like,
right.
honestly, I don't even know where you learned those skills. Are you self-taught or did your dad teach you?
All of the above. I learned growing up from my dad. And I would say I've probably kind of surpassed some of the things that dad has done, would do, and would take on. And for me, a lot of it has just come from just learning, studying. YouTube University is a huge, huge piece of that. So where do I draw the line? First of all, if I have to be comfortable with the project, for whatever that is. So let me take the deck project right now. So here's an easy one to use, because there's pieces of it that I will do myself, and there are probably aspects of it that I'm going to have to. So the whole project is basically so we're on a mountain cabin, and we've got on the back end, we've got three levels of deck. And for about half of the span of the house, the deck goes up three levels. And over time, as we've lived in there, the side of the deck has been sagging down towards the ground. And so I knew that needed to be fixed. So step one has been going down to the base, resupporting where the deck is supported, jack it back up, and then do what should have been done in the first place, which is pour concrete to where the supports go to the ground.
It's good to have footers and things like that, ideally.
So unfortunately, what I have found is all six of my posts that support that deck have rotted at the dirt, and so that massive deck is basically being supported by rotten timbers. Anyway,
Not
I
great.
digress. To answer the question, the physical moving the deck up, raising it up, rebuilding the deck part, fairly simple, straightforward. Not easy, but it's straightforward. Like a pretty simple process in terms of here's what you got to do, and you do it. Now there's some legal ramifications too, depending on what you're doing. If you you know you got to find out what your local laws are. Maybe you have an HOA or your local, what can you legally do to your house and not need a permit for? So in
Sure.
this case, redoing the deck, I'm simply fixing damage, I think is a technical term, or I'm not adding anything new. I'm not modifying, I'm just fixing something that was broken and repairing it. Now, the ultimate project is, as I re-solidify the deck at the base, on the third level, that part ultimately is going to be turned into a finished space, with half of it being an office and half of it being another bedroom. So there is an area that functionally I can do the work. But legally is a spot where I'm going to have to rely on the use of contractors and actually even in this case a structural engineer to come out and look and sort of verify and check off, we're supporting another level of a house, finishing that in. And so yeah, the line really has to be, first of all, your comfortability, but then where does that legal side come in? Because if you do something without a permit and you end up selling or add something to your house
Yeah.
and the tax assessor comes by and takes a picture, you could be out thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars that you have to redo, potentially tear down the work,
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, that's a thing that sometimes out of state clients that come to Greenville don't understand is that in Greenville we don't permit a lot of the work. Like house flippers, I mean there's very Greenville County in particular, there's not a ton of stuff that like you'll get in trouble for if you don't permit it.
Oh,
And
fascinating.
our appraisers recognize this too. So as part of the appraisal process, they don't go digging for permits or requiring anything like that. Like they just understand
Gotcha.
this home's been renovated and pretty much unless there was some kind of a massive add-on or something like that, there's not a whole lot that's going to be required. Like, there's actually a joke among contractors that they do roofs on the weekend because they'll get away with it without having to permit it. Whereas if it's during the week, they might have a Greenville County keyboard, not keyboard warrior, but a clipboard warrior come out and tell them you got to get this permitted, which is, I understand why they do that, but it's a roof. It's like what's going to happen? Is
I
it going to
know.
cave in on you or but
I think I understand when it comes to things like running electrical, or even plumbing, albeit a plumbing error is only gonna it's only gonna cost you. An
yeah,
electrical
for sure.
error, you could lose your house, right? And people could
Absolutely.
die. So on those levels, or potentially even like with what I'm dealing with, like a potential structural issue where somebody that has some knowledge, right? I might think I do, and if it didn't need to be permitted, I probably wouldn't do it, if we're being honest, right?
Sure.
So I feel confident being able to do that, but at the same time, operating within the bounds of what those laws are, having somebody that actually knows, not just thinks they know, to say, yeah, actually, I think this can support a room,
Yeah. At what point are you going to have to involve the structural engineer?
whenever it comes time to actually finishing in that room.
Okay.
So
So you
currently,
don't have to do that now as you're putting in the support
correct.
and all of
Well,
that.
because again, all I'm doing now is just redoing what is currently there.
Okay.
Right. So all I'm doing is going and taking every one of those six posts that supports that whole deck, pulling it out, supporting it, pulling it out, digging out the old part, and then pouring in concrete, and then the concrete actually coming up out of the ground as it's supposed to, in a tube, so that post is not touching ground. It's sitting on concrete and won't ever have any contact with the ground. So that's all I'm doing. I'm just redoing that currently and then
Yeah.
rebuilding the deck. That all can be done without needing any of those permits.
Right, right,
So
right. So, are you taking any other steps to with regard to the deck itself to try to extend its life or anything like
yeah, I'm building it the right way.
that?
So currently, the way it was constructed, there are no joist hangers on any of the joists.
How old do you think the deck is?
Well, I think it's original house. I think it was built in 2007, I think.
Okay, interesting.
So yeah, pushing 20 years.
Okay.
So yeah, so no joist hangers. Obviously the 6x6 is what straight down to the ground. And so what I've understood talking to contractors that are friends of mine up here in LJ, building codes have only sort of come into the 20th century in LJ or in
Sure.
our county, Gilmer County, in the last probably 5 to 7 years,
Okay.
where people are actually, being checked on as they build things. So back then, nobody would have thought two things about, you throw a deck up, put it into the ground, and you move on,
Sure.
even though out of all the places in the world where you might would want to make sure the deck isn't going to slip away is when it's literally on a
Yeah, on a
90 degree
mountain.
hill.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, there's got to be all sorts of termites around there as well, which
There
just.
are, I mean, we're treated for termites at, obviously living in a log cabin, that seems like step number one.
Yep.
And so yeah, we're treated and routinely checked, for termites and, but again, having the posts that don't go into the ground, it'll eliminate some of that
Yeah.
potential, but the potential for damage. Yeah.
Absolutely. So I've looked at log cabins for a long time. I actually have
Yeah.
a search in the Greenville MLS specifically for log cabins. Just because just I
Yeah.
just I love log cabins, always have.
Yes. Yes.
And I don't know, one day maybe I'll get one, maybe not. But I always, like I said, I have that
You
search
need
set
to
up.
enhance that search to LJ
Well,
and find a log cabinet.
I have looked at some
I know you
in
have.
your neighborhood before. But not to move there, anyone, just just vacation ideas. What's it like being a log cabin owner? What are some of the differences in terms of maintenance and
Yeah.
all of that?
So first of all, a lot of times you'll notice a lot of log cabins were built internally as a sort of a transient place to be, right? Not a place to live. And so that means a lot of houses were made without things like closets in places where you'd normally have closets, kitchens that are maybe a little smaller. And so that's one of the things that we noticed when we first moved up here. So to the log cabin piece of it, I'll talk real quick. We have wanted to live in a log cabin for our whole marriage. We have, I mean, even so far back as to when we were, I mean, within the first couple of years of marriage, when we were down there in South Carolina, I don't know if you remember me doing this or not. I don't know if you've seen them now, but I had, this was, I guess, 12 years ago, I made this massive, I call it my throne, this is massive wooden
Oh
chair. Out of a tree that was cut down where we lived there in South Carolina, and as I carved this, I mean the chunk of the tree that I was using was like 3 foot tall, and it was, I mean, you can't get your arms around it. It was literally a throne that I carved out with a chainsaw, and I remember telling my wife when I finished it, like, man, one day when we live in our log cabin, this will be perfect. And then subsequently, like a few months later, I made this random chandelier out of the root of a cedar tree. So it's a darnest thing. And the root system was hollowed out of the cedar tree, and I was able to make this light fixture that drops inside of it, and it hangs up. And again, had this with my massive wooden throne, and I told Diana, like, these things one day will go perfectly in our log cabin. So they're now in our log cabin. We've toted around with this all these years. So we had wanted to live in that type of home. And so when we moved up here, or we're looking to move up here, that was sort of the top of our list, was that was what we wanted. But we learned pretty quickly, like I mentioned a minute ago, that a lot of those houses were not made to live in. They were made, throw up a
To
house that
vacation
you
in.
can, exactly, that you don't need all these extra things. So bathroom floor plans were kind of wonky. So we got really lucky with our home that was built specifically by somebody for it to be his personal vacation home, not to rent out, and not, so he built it more for spec of home that you would live in and not that you just rent out as a short-term rental. And so that's one thing that you could potentially have. And even in that, there's still some oddities that we have that we've had to sort of come around, smaller closet spaces, our master closet being a little smaller than what you would normally have. that type of thing. And so there's that aspect, sort of floor plan stuff. And then you've got my favorite thing about living in a log cabin, and that is, do you want to hang a picture? Wherever you want to hang it, put up a nail, and there you go. It is, it
Don't
literally
have to worry
might
about
be
studs. Don't have to worry about
no studs,
anchoring things.
none of those. No having to find, you can literally hang up a picture wherever.
What do you
And
do when you want to
so
take it down though? Do you just like leave the hole behind, or is there a tasteful way to like plug that hole?
I have found most of the time, so I'm not using big nails, right? Unless you're hanging a hefty painting. So I'm not putting, framing nails in. I'm, you, you know, use and but you pull them out, you never know. You never see that there was a hole there, to our house, personally, not all log cabins are like this, but our house internally is 100% all wood, slat wood up the wall. So we have zero drywall in the entire house. And so
I always,
the
when I'm looking at these log cabins, if I see a room with drywall in it, I'm just like, oh, come on. I
yeah.
immediately just close the tab. I'm just like,
Yes.
not looking at this
Well,
anymore.
that or, and I know this might step on toes, but like painting the wood. Oh, I hate when people paint wood.
They
I
do that in log
love,
cabins?
yes, yeah,
Oh
they'll
my
do it with
gosh.
ceiling a lot of times. They'll
Like
put the
white?
slatted ceiling white. They'll use other colors sometimes, but a lot of times they'll like whitewash it, right? And oh, I hate it. I'm like, leave the wood alone.
No,
But
I don't like that. What
yeah, so
some of the
those are,
maintenance i issues that you run
yeah.
into?
So,
Like woodpeckers or wood bees or powder post beetles, that kind of stuff.
yes. So two things. I'll talk about the insect aspect, but one other piece, because a lot of times log cabins are made specifically designed. They got big loft spaces in them. That's kind of a lot of times kind of a standard thing. That means that heating and cooling those massive rooms can become problematic. And I have found, not just for our house, but friends that have them and other people around here, the HVAC systems were very poorly designed to handle that volume of cooling or heating that needs to take place. And so we have had to modify some of that internally. So what we've done, and this is sort of a practical thing we never would have thought about, living in a cabin with this massive loft style ceiling. We had to redo all the fans. So we've got a loft, and then that sort of flows out into the downstairs living room area, which is all one massive open area that is essentially two stories of open air. And so we put in two new fans up in the loft, that actually worked because the old ones didn't work. And then our main fan in the living room, we upgraded to a big wide, I think it's like a 10 blade fan.
Yeah, it's huge. It's
It
like the fans they
is.
have at my Planet Fitness I go to.
Yes, yeah. Those helped, but what really made the impact was we put a couple of mini splits in, and or well what we one head unit that you can feed off multiple feeders into your house, or or where the air actually comes out. And so we put one of those in our bedroom and one in that loft. So that's one thing that sort of is unique that you might have to try to figure out. Every house is going to be different, how that works. We had some HVAC guys come out and look and see if we even needed to like sort of close off some of the ducts that weren't really doing anything to force air other places, and then in place put those mini splits in and those types of things. So that's sort of a unique piece. As far as the like bug piece of it, because the whole outside is wood, we have carpenter bees that potentially could wreak havoc. And so we get treated for that. We've got a great pest control guy that comes and does all of our, the termites and all the external stuff. So they'll spray the whole outside of the house. But what I didn't realize until we had him and come to come and spray was that essentially the now I'm not a pest control guy, so if this isn't right, I'm gonna send you to him. You can hound him. But from my understanding, what
This isn't
happens is
pest control advice or
that's
legal
right.
advice.
These carpenter bees will bury into the wood, and then they'll leave their larvae in there. And as they leave, the woodpeckers come and get at the larvae. Like they want to eat the, so that ultimately you're not just destroying your house from the little holes everywhere, but then the woodpeckers come and they just completely destroy. And so you sort of have to stop the problem by stopping the bees getting in there in the first place. So yeah, we get sprayed for that. And that has seemed, for the most part, has eliminated any of those issues. Yeah.
Do you like I've seen those like carpenter bee traps and stuff like that. Do you guys do
We've
anything with
never
that?
had to,
Okay.
no. The treatment so far has been enough to keep them away. And then we've got obviously the bigger animals. We've got bears periodically that are around. We call them big trash pandas because that's really all they care about is your trash. And I know I have had to fend them off of destroying my trash before. Yeah, there's a great story of nobody was home, but of Seth having to run outside naked yelling at a bear because it was destroying my it was walking away, literally walking away with my trash can as I was getting ready to get in the shower. And so it's one of those things where like I'm glad nobody was home, but at the same time, like I kind of wish somebody would have like got a video of me running out of my house with no clothes on, yelling at this bear to put the trash can down. And yeah, it was
It's a shame that we don't have that that memorialized.
that
That
would be phenomenal.
yeah that would have been one for the ages right
Oh
there.
man. Yeah.
So tell
Yeah.
people a little bit about LJ, because so
Yeah.
well I'll start real quick, give you a second to catch your breath here. So for those listening, Michelle and I obviously very good friends with the Tea Gardens since all the way back to college. And so when they moved to LJ, we didn't visit them right away, but once they got settled in, then we visited. We've been back many times since then. And it's always a great little getaway for us. It's a unique mountain town that's kind of like a if you like Gatlinburg but want something a little bit more low key, and hopefully this isn't offensive, but also kind of a little bit more redneck. Which might be hard to believe, but you can get a little bit more redneck than Gatlinburg. That's kind of
Yes.
what LJ is for me, and without all the traffic that you get in Gatlinburg, obviously. There's no rundown theme parks like Obergatlinburg or anything like that.
Yeah.
But it's about trying to think,
Three and a
three and a
half,
half
I
hours
think.
away from
Yeah.
Greenville Drive.
Yeah.
And it's not a bad drive. You don't have to like completely go through Atlanta. So you take
I've
85.
never gone through Atlanta
Yeah.
to go up to Greenville.
Go down 85 and then kind of work your way up. So it's a pleasant drive. But like,
Yep.
what are some of the things that,
Yeah.
people want to do that getaway that they should be prepared for?
Yeah, so Ella, that's a pretty good description. We're the small town mountain community. That's a good way to put it. But here's the I'll put this is what I like to tell people. Because immediately when you think when you say we live in a small town, you think like dumpy, rundown, that it's not that. It's not that at all. Here's how I describe it. We are big enough to have we have a Chick-fil-A, a Walmart, and a Lowe's. So,
Yeah,
we're not a super tiny town.
for sure.
And so we've so I mean,
Although
and for
I'm
real,
still
that
angry that how many times did we get like KFC or something like that? I don't even remember what we were getting, and I didn't realize you had a Chick-fil-A. And then like I found that out like the fifth time that we visited.
like,
That you guys at Chick-fil-A.
wait
Yes, we've been getting like all
a
this other crappy fast
minute,
food. It was like
that's
there's a
funny.
Chick-fil-A right
You've been holding
there.
out on
Oh,
me.
and it was Dairy Queen. That's what we kept getting. I'm like, nobody likes Dairy Queen. Well, my daughter
No.
does, but
Well, yeah, I try. Yeah, not the hot spot.
no.
But so yeah, it was, sort of laugh up, but at the same time, for me, it's sort of practical to have, we've got everything we need to live here, right? Like we don't have to go somewhere else
Yeah.
to get groceries or anything
Sure.
like that. So that's sort of main part of town. Then we have the really cool, like the historical, like the downtown, the walkable shopping area type of thing. And actually I'm personally very familiar with that part of the town. I actually ran a retail store in that downtown space for the better part of about 3 years. And so
Three years.
having been
Wow.
in Yeah,
I don't,
dude, it was
it's hard to believe
right
it was that
about,
long.
I know. So I have pretty firsthand experience of what it looks like to, we're a pretty big tourist economy in the downtown area. A lot of our income is directly related to those coming in and visiting. And so that's obviously, spring breaks, summer, Christmas time is a big one. Actually, bigger than I would have thought. That people vacation at Christmas and New Year's. So anyway, LAJ has as the downtown sort of quaint little downtown shopping area, restaurants, that type of thing. But then outside of that, in the surrounding areas, you've got if you're into the outdoor stuff, you've got all kinds of hiking, mountain biking. Matter of fact, I just got off the trail a couple hours ago, out mountain biking, and I about this time of year, it's beautiful. My mountain bike stays on top of my car. Just about 99% of the time, unless it's going to rain, I take it off. We have actually our county is officially the mountain bike capital of Georgia. There's trails all over the place, so there's that. There's beautiful hiking. I think we've taken you on some of the hiking trails, kind of down to the river, and then actually one of our claim to fames is our county is the official start point of the Appalachian Trail. So the famous AT that goes all the way up to Maine, you actually start from our county. And because of that, we have a thing called a Trail Fest every year. And I'm actually the vice president of the Gilmer County Trail Association that helps put on that Trail Fest and support that. So a very outdoorsy town. We've got kayaking. You can tube down the rivers. You've done the kayaking part with me before. It's
And the
it's a
tubing.
blast, and the tubing, that's right. And so the other thing I would say is it's fun for all different styles. Like if you just want a chill float down a river, there's a spot to do that. If you're looking for something a little bit more intense and a few rapids, we've got, you can do that as well. So all the outdoor stuff. And then if you're here for a chill, we've got incredible wineries up here, all littered all across our county. Everything from really cool vibes to really beautiful views and some mixed in between. And so there really is incredible things to do for just relaxing. And then in the fall, apple picking season is sort of a big deal here. We've got our big apple fest once a year, and we've got tons and tons and tons of apple orchards that are all most of them lined down one of the main highways headed kind of out of town, and there's tons of things to go do there and festivals and stuff. So yeah, it's for a small town. There's quite a lot going on. Again, sort of mostly in the outdoorsy space, kind of thing.
Yeah, and I would say for those that like are wanting a reference point for like how large like downtown area is and kind of LJ as a whole, I kind of consider it comparable to like Traveler's Rest. I think it's a little bit the downtown space is more walkable than TR. Probably a little bit closer to like Greer in that sense, but.
That Greer was what first came to my mind. I think with the only caveat though, and this is where it's so hard to speak in those terms, because the problem is like Greer, you could consider it like a suburb of Greenville, right? Like it's
Right,
sort of just an
exactly.
extension of, whereas LJ is just its own thing. Like there's not a suburb of anything. There's nothing close to it. You have to physically leave our town to go to the next one. And then the same thing there, go to so we're not a suburb of Atlanta. We're an hour and a half from Atlanta. We're not, so yeah, it's like when you think of a downtown area, yeah, but like our whole community is kind of its own self-sufficient little ish thing,
And this is really, really off topic. Well, kind of, but how far away is where the cocaine bear story took place? How far away is that from you guys?
So I think that's Blood Mountain, I think, is officially the cocaine bear story. And actually, I was just hiking up there not too long ago.
Did you see any white powder lying around anywhere?
No, sniffed a couple of things, but it didn't.
No,
It
it didn't
wasn't.
do
It
anything.
wasn't
Okay.
doing
All
anything.
right.
About an hour-ish, hour
Okay.
15 maybe, to where that sort of trailhead is. Yeah, beautiful area up there. Yeah,
Yeah.
that's not our county, but yeah, that's a pretty crazy story.
That was quite the movie too.
Did I tell you I've actually seen the actual bear that they caught? Did I
Oh
tell you
yeah,
about that?
I think you did. Where is that? You
It's
told
in
me.
it's in Lexington, Kentucky. the most random, this is maybe the most random story I've ever experienced personally. I was listening to a podcast. We were on our way down from Cincinnati, headed back down to Atlanta. And I happened to be listening to a podcast that was describing that. So I'd never heard of the Cocaine Bear story, didn't know anything about it. And on this
Is this
podcast,
before the
that
movie?
yes,
Okay.
right, it was the movie was about to come out, which is why they were talking about this. And they mentioned this Cocaine Bear story. And then the guy proceeds to describe what the story was. And randomly somebody says, well, yeah, I think they've got the bear now on display in Lexington, Kentucky. I looked at my map. I'm not kidding. We're driving south and we were driving through Lexington, Kentucky. And so, real quick, I Googled Le Cocaine Bear, Lexington, Kentucky, and found the spot. And I, dude, if I'm lying, I'm dying. The exit to get off was the very next exit I was passing. And so I literally, got off the interstate. And Diana's like, what are we doing? I was like, just wait, just wait. And so we pull up to this.
Not the
I don't
only
even
time
know
you've
how to
had to tell
just.
her that, right?
Yeah, truth. I don't even know how to describe this place that we went to. It was like a weird souvenir shop slash t-shirt thing that was like in an old mill place. Kind of reminded me of some of the old mill Greenville places.
Yeah.
And anyway, we walk in, and lo and behold, in front of us is this stuffed black bear. And there's all these things written up about it, about this being the famous cocaine bear that the story was, that the movie was coming out about. So anyway.
Unbelievable.
Random, yeah.
Yeah, that is, yeah, you had, I think, told me that you had seen it, but I didn't know all of those details. That's very interesting. So a couple more questions here. We've gone for close to an hour, I think, if I'm not mistaken. So one thing that again, this is something we probably talked about this in bits and pieces, but just to kind of pivot a little bit, I'm curious to hear from your perspective. So probably most of my listeners, or at least a lot of them, didn't know me prior to me getting into real estate. So, everyone that knows me, they associate me with real estate, in one way or another now. With you, I'm guessing it's not really the case, because our friendship well predates that. So you've seen kind of, as
The
I've
evolution.
gone, I'm like trying to think of what the word is, but you've seen me get into real estate and all of that, and I'm curious if there's anything that you've learned about my, like, hearing about my job, me telling you what it's like being a realtor, the world of real estate, anything that was like surprised you or like hasn't aligned with your expectations or anything like that.
So I think a couple of things. One, I think before sort of really, I mean, we've had some pretty in-depth conversations about real estate. Like when we're together, I love learning about what you're doing, and
Yeah, for
you've gone
sure.
in some kind of really niche things, and so I've really enjoyed. But as I've learned more, especially kind of early on, when you were kind of learning, it was all kind of new to you, and we were kind of learning through you some of those things and some things you were experiencing. I think one of the biggest things that stuck out for me was sort of how complicated that real estate could be. I think my perception a lot of times was, real estate was, excuse me, an easy way to make some cash, and people, you didn't need a whole lot of training, thought process. You can just kind of go do it, and vice versa. Because of that, I didn't have. I thought I want to say I don't want to have a lot of res didn't have a lot of respect for realtors. I don't know if that's the right way to put it. Because like as people know, I don't know that I valued the agent to the level that I have grown to
Like in
knowing what
comparison to
you
other
do.
careers.
I don't know that I saw it as necessary, right? I knew it was necessary in terms of legal, but like, how what do we really need you guys here for, and so I think that's been one thing. That there's so much complexity to so there's two aspects of that, not just like the transaction itself. I think that's one piece, but the entire like market knowledge. There's so much that goes into knowing and learning. And I know, because I know you personally, I know the time that you put in to learn that, study that, speak to that constantly, the changing, ever-evolving landscape. And so I think those two things, not just the transactional value of how do you go about selling a house, and there's some incredible value to have in a real estate agent that knows what they're doing. On the flip the flip side, knowing the market, both from the buying and selling standpoint, also brings incredible value, right? And so I think that that's the one big thing. And then the other thing I would say is from knowing you, and now the time that I've gotten to know you or been with you while you've done the real estate stuff, is and maybe this is more to those of you that are listening, like there are a
I don't
ton
know what you're about to say. Here we
there's
go.
a ton now there's a ton of realtors that maybe don't put the same amount of effort into those two things that I just described. And I
Seth is
think
the one that when I need to vent, it's either my wife or it's Seth, and I just I have to get off my chest the stupid stuff I have to deal with sometimes.
Let me, with that caveat too, I have here in where I live, I have two or three very close friends who are also realtors. So this is more than just you calling and venting, right? Like this is like I can actually say more than just one person this is true. There's a whole lot of people that are real estate agents by title or by like pass the test. That do not put the same amount of care into the transaction of the sale of the house, buying or the sale, and the market research in general, right? And so I think what I didn't realize before was the value that actually brings. And then not just sort of those are all almost like back end things, right? Like the market research is an ongoing thing. A lot of times I think people think about the transactional piece, like it have, get everything to contract, we got it, and then you're sort of off. And I think the amount of work that you put in to make sure that that's not the case, and that, whether it be responsiveness, whether it be, getting something that comes in. I mean, we've been together before when you've been on quote unquote vacation, which, I think you would argue doesn't necessarily really even happen, right? And
It's
so
a you're working with a different viewpoint.
that's right.
If
That's
it's at
right.
your house, I'm working with a cabin and mountain view.
Yeah. But where we'll be, in the middle of doing something, playing a game or having a conversation or something, and you'll peel off for a minute, because something needs to be done, and this is not a, I can get to it later. Whereas I know that that's not the case for many agents. And so yeah, I think that if I can toot your horn for a minute, and maybe those that are listening, if you're looking for an agent, yes, I am biased, but no, you really do. You do a great job at continuing to serve your clients, both before, during, and after that process. So yeah,
I
no.
appreciate that. Yeah, I just had a client from several years ago reach out to me for some random thing that I'm not going to get paid for, and I got to them within like an hour, and that's what I tell people is that well, I don't tell everyone this, but jokingly that when they sign up for my service, it comes with a lifetime warranty. As long as I'm alive, they're going to still be able to tap into my expertise and still be able to come back, like I'll have clients that like years later will ask for like a contractor recommendation. And they benefit from the fact that I might have new contractors now that I didn't have 3 years ago. I might have a new electrician or a new plumber or whatever the case may be.
Well, I think ultimately that speaks to, your the foundation of all of it is, a heart to kind of serve people, right? And yeah, ultimately you're making money, and that's a piece of what it looks like to be a real estate agent or any profession,
For
right?
sure.
Like I can make the same argument. I'm a paid full-time staff member at a church, right? Like I'm getting paid by a church, but ultimately the heart is I'm here to serve people. And I think that's where that heart comes from. That's why you do those things. That's
Absolutely.
why you know is because it's a heart not to get a check, but it's a heart to serve to serve people, you know.
For sure. All right, last but not least, you're in a unique perspective. You know Greenville really well. You lived in Clinton for years. You've spent a lot of time in Greenville, but you've mostly lived outside of Greenville. I'm curious for those, what would you say to those who are listening from outside of Greenville but are interested in this area? What are the things from your perspective that's like, okay, here are the things to consider that, I'm not even asking for good things. It could be something that's like, here's a hesitation point, whatever. What's your perspective? What would you say to them?
So I'll put it this way, and I'll expand. But almost 4 years ago, or over 4 years ago, when we were looking to move, and we didn't necessarily we sort of had our options open as to where to go at the time, and LJ wasn't even in the cards. Didn't even honestly, the only thing I knew about LJ was I used to have to drive through this dumpy little town because it used to be real dumpy. I used to have to
Sure.
drive through this dumpy little
Well,
town to
Greenville
get to the
used to be pretty
mountains.
dumpy as well,
Well,
so
yeah.
40 years ago.
Anyway, so I knew nothing about LJ. It wasn't in the cards. When we were ready to move and make sort of a next step, and I think you know this, we had two options. One was move to Greenville. And personally, Greenville, we're very familiar with the area. We have family and friends that, all of my wife's side of her family lives in Greenville. All of her extended family are there, Greenville, Greer area. So we know the area very well. We have some decent friends, the McCunes, that we hang out with here and there. So, there's a few good things. But it was either sort of move back closer to where our parents were in the Lower and Stone Mountain area or Greenville. And ultimately, out of nowhere, LJ came up, but we were really pursuing every possible lead to move to Greenville during that time. So I'll start with that in terms of that was, had it not been for this pretty crazy, out of the blue set of circumstances that brought us here to LJ, and I'm so thankful for. Now, the odds are we probably would have ended up in Greenville there
Sure.
4 years ago. And the reasons were, obviously there's personal reasons. We have friends and family there, right? So for
Yeah.
us, that is a piece of it. But I think, we lived for 3 years just south of Greenville. So Greenville was our biggest city that we would come to. So everything that we would do shopping wise and entertainment wise was all there in Greenville.
Yeah, the
So we got
shopping
pre-food.
for all of Clinton's perks, the shopping and
Yes.
entertainment scene in Clinton's not super hot at the moment.
Hey, we had an IGA, dude. I mean,
That's a good
like,
point. You might have a food line
so
too somewhere. I don't know.
they do. Yeah, that was on the other side. We didn't go there as much.
Oh, the other side of
Anyway,
Clinton sounds bad.
yeah, dude, you gotta watch. So obviously we've got kids and family, so I can only speak from my perspective. And Greenville just has so many things to offer in terms of being able to plug your family into community, whether it be, in ways of faith, if you're, going looking for a church, school systems, other ways to get involved in community, get to know other families. Honestly, one of the massive things is the parks. Greenville has some incredible parks. When I'm up there, we love to go play disc golf, and there's so many beautiful parks to go play disc golf out.
Yep.
We love to take our kids to, they're putting in new parks all the time. Each one has sort of a cool, unique feel. And so from that aspect, that's some really cool things. And obviously, the downtown part of Greenville, you've got all sorts of, the vibe, if you will, is really cool. There's lots of stuff going on. And then what I have loved to see happen in Greenville over the last probably 10 years, maybe you could speak a little bit more specifically, but all these sort of restorations of the old mills in these little pockets that are being revamped and redeveloped. I'm a big fan of like the mixed use space that sort of builds from one area, and you can sort of have an all-in-one zone where you can kind of hang out, shop, eat, live potentially. So, I think, I've described to people before, Greenville is like kind of the best of all the world. It still feels, I don't live there, right? But it still feels a little bit, and I'd say small town, not in terms of like living in an LJ, but small town in terms of ease of access, getting around. Traffic isn't
Absolutely.
insane
Yeah.
everywhere you go.
You still
But
bump
man,
into people that you know.
that's right. That's right. But then you've got everything, you know, outside of a major sports team, you've got just about everything
We do
that,
have Clemson, which is close, but it's not a professional sports
I
team.
said major sports team.
Yeah. S says the guy that lives in Georgia and is an Ohio State fan.
This is true. I was born there. I was born in Ohio.
Yeah.
There, you know.
Yeah.
Anyway, but yeah, I mean, you have literally everything else that you could want, you know, from and then just the ease of access to other cities. Like, you know, if you need to be in Charlotte or Atlanta, you know, professionally wise, like if that, you know, if you travel a lot, you know, Greenville has airports too, obviously, but you know, so yeah, that would be my, if you're looking to move to Greenville, really just phenomenal place, really cool, unique things like a Love's grocery store or a Lowe's, sorry, not Love's, Lowe's grocery store. I don't know if it's, is that specific, unique to Greenville? I've
No,
never seen them
no,
anywhere
it's not.
else. Okay.
It's
But then,
not a,
you know,
I don't know much about specifically about the chain, like where all it is,
okay.
but it's not a Greenville chain.
Okay. And then just on the one last thing I'd say, there's so much diversity of people and influence all over the city. You know, you've got all sorts of international influence. It feels like there's multiculturals, you know, whether it be from restaurants or to people you get to see. And it's, yeah, it's just, it's a very enjoyable place to be at and to, I say live, I've never actually technically lived there, but yeah.
Clinton counts to me. I mean,
Ish, close.
I mean, I've sold homes in Lawrence County
Yeah.
and Anderson County, like all down in those areas. So that's all
Yeah.
part of the upstate. It's not
It
Greenville, but it's
is.
part of the upstate. It's part of the greater Greenville area, as
Yeah. Well, and
we
I
also
guess
call it.
too, like we've, you know, I love the outdoor spots here in LJ. Greenville is not adverse to its own close proximity to outdoor things, right? Like
Oh yeah.
you've got lots of great outdoorsy things, and you know, are pretty close to, you know, if you want to get up further north, up into the mountains of North Carolina and stuff, you know, very, very accessible.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, we've got Panther Town, which you and I have hiked at, Table
Yep.
Rock up there, Caesar's Head, and you know, you keep going. I mean, it just, and of course, Asheville is 1 hour away,
Is it
basically.
really only an hour?
Yeah, well, I mean,
Okay.
it wouldn't be an hour from like Clinton, but
Right.
from where we are, it'd be about an hour.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, yeah. Well, thanks, man.
Yeah, dude.
By the way, I didn't pay Seth to say good things about me or about Greenville. You know, before we did this, I had sent him like a list of here are some questions I'm gonna ask. I didn't ask for him to go in any direction. If he said anything bad, I was just gonna edit it out. So,
As one should.
as one should.
Yeah,
But Seth, thank you so much for coming
man.
on. If you guys, I'm not going to put Seth's contact info in the show notes, but if you guys do want to visit LJ, I assume, Seth, that you would be more than happy to share information with them.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah.
And so I'd be happy to connect you with him to give information. I do recommend that you do visit that area at some point. It's definitely worth doing. And I'm looking forward to, once I post clips of this interview online, that Seth's going to anger
Anger my
him.
own self.
He's gonna anger himself,
I
and I will too. We're gonna have to anger it since we're both in
This is gonna be the greatest thing ever.
it.
It
Thank you
doesn't take
guys.
much, dude.
No,
Sorry.
you're good. Thank you guys for listening. That's all for today's episode. Like, rate, re review, subscribe. If you need a realtor in Greenville, please reach out to me. My information, all of my contact info is in the show notes. We will talk to you guys again next time.